This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Ng Teck. My guest today needs little introduction. Tian Chua is Vice President of Parti Keadilan Rakyat, former Member of Parliament for Batu and author of the recently published Kajang Diary, A Prison Retreat, a book about Tian's one-month jail sentence last September following his conviction for refusing to leave a police-restricted area during the Bursay 3.0 rally in 2012. Tian, thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, hi. Hello, everybody.
So, you've been, over the course of a career, you've been arrested, detained and imprisoned many times. Why did you want to do this book this time?
Okay, it was not really intentional. Well, I spent a lot of time taking down notes during my detention, and maybe it's a way to pass time. And I also did some drawing. When I came out, quite a number of press interview me, journalists interview me, and some of them feel that I can present something quite different compared to the ordinary, typical prisons type of genre. So, which include a lot of my hand-drawn descriptions of the life in prison. So, and then a publisher looked out and I thought it would be a good idea to compile it together and make it into a book.
The cover of the book has someone on it. Is this a portrait of yourself?
The publisher's got some artist to draw it. Beside the cover's drawing, the rest of the drawing in the book, they were mine.
The Mandarin version was published first. Yeah. Did you write in Mandarin when you were
in prison? Although I'm a Mandarin speaker, in prison I wrote my diary in English. So it was compiled first in and translated into Chinese, and got it published first because I thought maybe to get the Chinese version out will be a good way to introduce the issues. And the English one maybe have a slightly smaller market in Malaysia. So it's also with accumulating some profit, then we could go on to print English and Malay.
Right.
So I expect before the end of the year, the English one will come up.
So it's a compilation of all your writings during that 1 month stay in?
Not really. The Chinese version is a compilation as well as edited and rewrite of the stories that to make it much more flow, because when I was, my notes was written in the diary form, but the book is not presented as a chronology of events in prison, but rather small stories, a compilation of small stories that happened when I was in prison.
What was your daily routine in prison?
Well, daily routine is the same in prisons. It's about routine. So the whole point about what I was writing is that how do we create meaning out of a very seemingly monotonous routine, and how in a situation where we are confined and in a situation that people presume that there was no freedom, I want to articulate the sense that, in fact, freedom is absolute and nobody can take away from us. It is an expression of we are still free despite physically we are confined to a small area, small place. So
How small was the cell?
Well, about 10 times 10, about 10 feet wide times about 20 feet length. So that's the space that I spend most of my time in.
And do you spend most of your time in the cell? Do you have time to exercise?
Okay. 24 hours beside 1 hour in the morning, and then the prison's officers also give me extra hours in the afternoon. So I have 2 hours of going out to do some exercise or get some sun, walk around, jogging a bit. So the rest of the times I will be in the cell.
Mm. What about visitation? Are inmates allowed that?
Okay. Prison's regulations give certain visits. Visitations considered privilege. The prison authorities allow once a month for new prisoners. As time go past, you will get about 3 weeks. I think after a longer period, you get about once every 3 weeks, then once every 2 weeks. Eventually, if you're very long, you get once a week. Since my sentence was only one month, so actually I was given two visits, because by right, anyone who enter, the first time you get a visit, and then 1 month after that you can start visit, but they give slightly concessions. Have my 1 month also, as well as the first entry visit, to be given in the periods of my detention.
Mm. I suppose you and Jamal Yunus now have something in common in that you both want to see some reforms to the prison system. If I can get you to describe, what was prison conditions like? Was it overcrowded? Is it a health hazard? What are the aspects of prison system that you want to reform the most?
I think, yes, overcrowdedness is one of the big problems. I don't think the solution to overcrowded prison is to build more prison. For example, the prison's officers are under tremendous stress when the facilities was sufficient only for 2,500 or 2,000 people, and not that you have to take care of 5,000 people. So I think first of all, the prison's wardens, the workers, the officers, the working condition must improve. And their salaries and their welfare must be taken care of first, because prison officers, among all the uniforms units, they were the lowest pay. There was also an assumption that prison officers do very little work, because they just sit there and open the doors, close the doors. And in fact, it is not true. Prison officers has a lot of work, and they are, because of our system, they are not only people who take care of prisoners, but they also tend to be, have to do counseling jobs, they have to do the administrative jobs, they have to be organizers and all sort of things. So that's very first things we have to do. Secondly, definitely, it is the condition within there. I wouldn't say that, I wouldn't say that it is extremely bad. I would say that Malaysian prison were able to maintain some basic things like cleanliness and basic health. But the problem is, when you have overcrowdedness, then you're very hard to to ensure that the hygienes and the disease are not spread. But the thing is, we need a lot more, funding in order to achieve that. One aspect of this is that it's not so much when people are inside the prison. They were probably protected and prevented from involving or engaging in antisocial or criminal activity. But people who are in there, no matter how long they serve, they have nothing but to deny them freedom, right? There were very little education program. There were very few opportunity for them to participate in work. So this definitely has to be improved, because we don't want, I think it is the is worst form of torture is someone who was just sitting there.
Who's idle and nothing to do.
So I would think that, in fact, it was agreed by the prison authorities, we need more maybe vocational training process. Prison authorities appreciates a lot of NGOs want to go in and do some voluntary work. Not unfortunate. It's a pity that there is a stereotype that they are morally defect, people who are morally defect in prison. So most of the group that go in are mostly about religious, moralities, ethics, and trying to reform them to become a better person. Actually, the reality is not. Most of them end up in vices because of circumstances, and a lot of time was economy. So we should have more NGO going in to offer concrete things that they can use in the society, like education, like job training. And when they come out, they must be NGOs that help them to get back to the ordinary life, helping them to get jobs, helping them with loans, and et cetera, et cetera. Those are more comprehensive reforms that we have to engage in.
One way that you fill the time, other than writing and drawing, is also through reading. And your reading materials has been much publicized. You always bring with you the three holy books of the major religions. Are you a religious person?
I wouldn't say I'm very religious, and I think that's why I, in a sense that prison time give me opportunities to go through the religious book because I have spare time. So I take things, all the wisdom said, embody in those books, those scriptures, as universal wisdom and knowledge that shared by all humanities. So they have withered thousands of years. We should not just dismiss them as religious texts as such. To me, they were heritage of humanities. And one thing that's partly also practical, I think the easiest way to kill time in prison when we were not allowed to do anything is to read. Reading materials are not easy to get in. Having Bible, Quran, and the Gita is something that very difficult for any prison authority to refuse, right? They have to allow those books. So there's also some practical reason for that. So I always carry them around. So whenever I have to go to lockup, I will insist that I want to bring either of the books or all three of the books. So the authorities will be a bit hard to say, no, you cannot read Bible, you cannot read Quran or the Gita. So it gives me access to reading.
Back issues seems to be a common denominator among detainees, and you fractured yours as well in a previous stint.
Yeah.
Why is this? Is this caused by the sleeping arrangement?
I do not know, because I think generally we are in this modern society that back is actually one of the things that we strain them a lot. Maybe in prison, part of it is lack of exercise. Part of it is maybe when we are not taking care of it enough. So then it tend to come up. But this time, I don't have so much of a back issues. In fact, I don't have much health issues during my detention. Previously, I was injured because of during the arrest. I was injured by the process of arrest, and I was when I was violently assaulted, that caused fractured on my one of the lumbar bone.
With this book, you've also started a conversation about getting a prison reform bill to be tabled in Parliament. How is that going?
Well, I'm not a member of Parliament now. I believe that the new government has a lot of ambitious plan. Definitely, the change of the current prison's situations need to be upgraded, need to be followed through. And I'm thinking more than just a so-called prison reform bill. To take it in a broader context, we have to change law to make sure that to reduce people from going into prison. I would say more than half, or probably 60-70% of the people were detained in prison, they were drug related. In the first place, they shouldn't be there, mm-hmm. right? So a more effective means of combating drug need to be introduced.
And because it's drug related, they're mostly young inmates as well?
Yes, young and old actually is a broad range of people of all the different age groups and also all ethnicities. The reality is that we have to start recognizing so-called tough law is not effective in combating drugs. I mean, after all these decades of very tough law, death sentence, the only thing is resulted overcrowded prison. We have to start to study carefully, and we also have to make distinction between cannabis and the hard drugs, and also artificial drugs like drugs like ice and other things. So, and also we have to study it is the drug dependency is part of a psychological problem. Imprisonment doesn't solve that. So I would think that it is not just a bill to reform prison condition, which is necessary. But a more important thing is we have to look into our criminal system and to have a thorough review and evaluation of the effectiveness of imprisonment in reforming crimes. So this is a bigger task.
One last question before we take a short break. Entering prison now as an older person, does it change how you see things? Do you go into it having a different mindset compared to when you were younger?
Okay. To dispel some myth, I did not go to prison so often.
Sorry if I give that impression.
No. I think that not just you, but I think it's a general perception. Because we mix up all the different category of prison or detention. I've been to ISA, it is a prison. It's under prison department. But ISA was basically a detention without trial. And 2 years I was placed in Kamunting. It is a camp. It's like a concentration camp, if you can call it that way. It is basically a broader space and we just cannot leave the compound. And then during the Reformatsi days, I was arrested and put into lockup, which is basically attached to the police station. Those are conditions which is quite bad and also often very crowded. And then there's prison. So I only been to Taiping prison short while, because of the release of ISA, I was put into Taiping for a few days. Then Kajang was my first time properly serve a prison sentence. So that's why There's a lot of confusion there. Going to Kajang, which is a lot more, for me, a lot more calmer, because it was the first time that I was sentenced to serve prison sentence. Means that I know after 1 month I'm coming out. Previously, there was no certainty. There's a lot of anxiety because you do not know how long the lockup will be. ISA also is the same. We could be renewed every 2 years and we could end up there for 10 years or 5 years or whichever. So it's very different. So I would think that the Kajang experience for me was a lot more stable, and I have I can plan better. I did a lot of work to fill up my time.
I'm speaking today to former Batu MP Tian Chua, whose book Kajang Diary, A Prison Retreat, was published recently. I asked Tian about his plans for the upcoming PKR elections and how he intends to challenge his disqualification from G14 after this short break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entek. My guest today is Tian Chua, who just released Kajang Diary, A Prison Retreat, which documents his one-month prison stint last September. He, of course, is the vice president of PKR and a former MP of Batu. So I guess it's official. You've announced that you will be defending your vice president post in the PKR elections. I guess I'll ask you first, what is the function of a VP in PKR in terms of the decision-making process, and why are you choosing to offer yourself in this election?
Okay, just for historical record, I was vice president when Parti Keadilan Nasional was formed in 1999, and then I continued for another term. When the merger happened, I relinquished my post as vice president. I was appointed as Ketua Penerangan, the information chief. And then after that, I served another term as a strategic director of the parties. I came back last election, party election, to stand for vice president, and I won. This round, in theory, is my second term. As vice president under Parti Keadilan Rakyat. Generally, vice presidents, as the name imply, we are just the positions as a general functions to assist the presidents and deputy president in tasks that to provide leaderships and direction in policies to the parties. Sometime functionally, we will be assigned each vice president to more or less focus on one aspect. for example, organizations or election directors or international affairs, etc., etc. That will have to be decided collectively with the entire leadership. We have a slightly bigger size of vice presidency. That's due to the party is very pluralistic. We have diverse people from diverse background. In order to accommodate all these voices and different background into the leaderships when they formulate opinion, formulate policies as make decision, we have expanded the vice presidency to 4 elected and 3 extra appointed vice president. So all of us, vice president, deputy presidents and president, plus a few other opposition posts like treasurer and information chief, will sit in the council of political bureau. And every week we will more or less meet and also make decisions on policy matter.
Mm. Most of the attention will see the contests for the deputy president. What do you see is at stake here? What is this election about in the contestation, you know, between Rafizi Ramli and Azmin Ali?
Well, in the election, definitely there will be competition. So for me, be it Rafizi Ramli or whoever, the election is about giving opportunity to everybody to offer themselves. And I think the only thing is different is this election, this party election, different from our previous party elections. This is the first time that Keadilan will present itself to the public as the new ruling parties. We are participating in a coalition that governs this country. The election, it is no longer about who is moving out, who is occupying what places. The most important thing is for us to present to the public that we are a mature, competent and prudent parties, that people can put trust in us for the nation's future. That's why I hope all contestants in this party election to be very mindful of the public attention that they will draw, because it's not so much the busybody want to know who have more gossips and who is more who is better than the others. Actually, it's collectively the public want to see we offer a teams of leaders can work together, that has the capacities and capability to lead this nation. So that's why I think the election become much more important, and suddenly all the medias are focusing on it. So that also remind our members to conduct itself in a manner that will instill public confidence.
Whose vision or ideas would you be endorsing?
I don't want to endorse individuals. For me, as I said, we have to be able to provide direction to the public. And we have to show this election is not about divisions. This election is about unity. And I hope, be it Azmin or Rafizi. Fair enough, Rafizi has the rights to challenge. But most important is not only the process of election, but more important is after the election, whether leaders has that visions and also have the moral standing to present itself that we still can work together. The competitions through the election is just a process, but after the process, we are one team to lead the country.
So, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are the former Batu MP. You have been, before G14, the Batu MP for the past 10 years, since 2008. Let's start on April 28th. What happened on nomination day?
Well, nomination day was a bit of a surprise because as everyone know, and then as the court announced while I was receiving my sentence, was that my sentence was reduced to 2,000 in order to enable me to continue to serve as an MP as well as to contest for election. And I was successfully elected without any problems during the nomination in the last GE 2013. Unfortunately, on the day of nomination in 2018, just a while ago, that the returning officer said that my 2000 fine disqualified me from contesting for election. It was a shock, and on the spot, I could not do anything. So I was very anxious because I not so much that I was not allowed to contest. I was anxious also because it could possibly mean that we will lose Batu as a seat that held by Pakatan Harapan.
At what point did you and your campaign team decide to endorse Prabhakaran?
I, together with my teams, went through the normal the procedure of trying to appeal in court and to appeal to the executions of the rules of law. Since we believe that the returning officer were violating the spirits of law, as well as to defy the court orders, the decision of the courts. It is an act of sub judice. Unfortunately, our appeal in court were rejected. In the meantime, I did some discussion with all the candidates, alternative to Barisan Nasional. And finally, we decided that the most suitable person was the independent, young student, Prabhakaran. And 4 days before the voting, we made an open declaration to support him as the candidates for endorsed by Pakatan Harapan.
How is your relationship with him now? Are you still very involved in the Batu constituency?
I try to help as much as I can. They were the whole teams of the Keadilan Batu people continue to manage the service centres, continue to serve the communities, and I, from time to time, will provide some advice to the team that we are working together with Pava. So I hope, so far, he has been doing a good job. And though there's a lot of issues need to be resolved and a lot of things need experience, it has to be accumulated over time.
It's been reported that you will be filing a new appeal to the High Court to contest the disqualification or seek clarification on the status.
I have filed appeal earlier. What I intend to do is not to challenge the result of the election. Though I maintain that the election commission was unfair by dismissing my opportunity to contest. Yet since Pakatan Harapan has won the election and we are now holding the government, I think the election is the last thing that we need to burden the voters. I'm happy to play an alternative role, continue to assist the Member of Parliament or some of the ministers to strengthen the government as well as to be able to fulfill our manifestos to provide better governance in this country.
Yeah. But you would need legal clarity whether you would be able to stand in Jury 15, isn't it?
Yeah, I have written to the Attorney Generals. I believe that I will receive an opinion from Attorney General whether I am qualified to stand. In the meantime, my legal representation will appeal again to High Court, will file to seek a declaration that I'm not disqualified and I should have the right to contest in any future elections.
Mm-hmm. The next 5 years out of Parliament, you've said you'll be assisting the party and guiding the government towards the election manifesto promises. What would be your focus areas?
There's a lot of things to be done. There are lots of things to be done for the coming years, mm-hmm. right? I know the entire government also the truth. It's very hard to focus on just one aspect because it is a comprehensive reform that we are after. But I can only do things that I am. I have some capacity in. Currently, I will be more focused on trying to strengthen the organization of the parties and also to become the bridge between the public and the government to narrow the gap between the expectations from the people and with the performance of government. So whatever I can to take advantage on my informal status, I could go around, meet with people, whether this is from the industry, from the private sectors, or from ordinary publics, that's on issues that they feel the government should undertake urgently. So... And from there, I could trying to channel those voices to the government.
Kajang Diary, A Prison Retreat, is now out in bookstores. I'm made to understand that the English and Malay versions will be coming out soon.
Yeah.
Is there a release date already planned?
I plan to get it out within 1 or 2 months' time. And not to delay too much because, when we start delaying things, we lose the momentum and we lose the enthusiasm to write. And especially when there's a lot of things to do, I tend to be distracted from focusing on the editing work. So I hope by the end of the month, this month, I will finish the final draft and then to be printed next month.
Dendra, thank you very much for speaking to me today.
Yeah, thank you.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.